I remember one time we were moving a lady in our congregation from Farmington to Gananda. Her husband had died, and she had no family in the state. So when she needed to move to a new place, our church said we would help her. And we had a ton of people over at her apartment, and one of her neighbors sat outside in a lawn chair and watched us the whole time we were packing her up, as we were laughing, as we were loading, as U-Hauls and pickup trucks were pulling in and out with stuff. And at the end, I overheard the older gentleman, who hadn't said anything the whole time, just watched us for over a couple of hours, just sitting there. The older gentleman asked the widow, "Who are these people?" And she said, "Oh, they're my church." And he said, "Wow, I've been a member of my church all my life, and they've never helped me do anything." And that was sad to me, so I went over and invited him to be part of our church. Today's good news is, if you've never been part of a good church, we want you to be part of ours. Our sermon series is called Playing for a Winning Team. We're looking at stories that Jesus told about what it looks like to live in the kingdom of heaven. These stories that he told are called parables. They're short stories that he tells, stuff about everyday life. But the points he makes with these stories are keys to the kingdom. So today's sermon is about being people in the church being good teammates. And here's today's parable about a guy Jesus said did that well. Luke chapter 10, verse 30 says, "In reply, Jesus said, a man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he was attacked by robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead." Now, this might have actually happened the night before. Jesus might have heard this report on WHAM morning news. The road from Jerusalem to Jericho was a mountainous stretch of 18 miles of twists and turns. There were no streetlights. There was no police patrol. Nasty things regularly happened there in the dark. The nickname for this road was Bloody Boulevard. And most sane people never went down that road, and certainly not alone. It's kind of like J Street up in the city. There's just no sense being there at night. But this guy tried it, and he got mugged. He got beaten. They took everything he had, and they left him lying face down on the road. I know a preacher, an older man in his 70s, who was preaching a revival in a Midwest town. Every night he would preach at the church building, and then he would return to his hotel room. And one night when he returned, he was confronted by two guys, and they wanted his money. He only had $4 on him, and his assailants were so mad, they didn't take the $4. They just beat him viciously, leaving him blind in one eye. An old preacher. And when Jesus told his story, people listening had the same reaction you did. They went, "Oh, this guy." But the good news for the victim, who's lying almost dead in the road, here comes a priest. Priests back then were men of God who lived the best lives of anyone. Everyone looked up to the priests. So when Jesus mentions there's a priest on his way, everybody is so relieved. They say, "Look, up in the sky, it's a bird, it's a plane." I could never understand why those people got so excited about the bird and the plane. Anyway, look, it's a priest. But no, the people listening to Jesus, they had cause for joy because the priest was coming to the rescue. Surely this priest will swoop in and help the unfortunate dude on the ground, right? Verse 31 in Jesus' story says, "A priest happened to be going down the same road, and when he saw the man, beaten and bloodied and laying in the road, he passed by on the other side." Verse 32 says, "So too a Levite, when he came to the place, saw him and passed by on the other side." And Jesus' audience listening to the story say, "Whoa, not only the priest, but a Levi walked by too?" Levites back then were guys whose jobs were working in the temple. This would have been a full-time church guy. He might have been a worship leader. He might have been a Bible college professor. He might have run the church preschool in town. He was not a priest, but he was great. And both the priest and the Levite walked right by the guy lying on the ground. That's not right. And people listening to Jesus' story said, "Hey, Jesus, are you sure that's what happened? Because that doesn't sound right to us." And Jesus said, "Oh, I'm sure that's what happened. In fact, they walked right by," and it gets even weirder after that. In verse 33, Jesus says, "But a Samaritan, as he traveled, came where the man was. And when he saw him, he took pity on him. He went to him and bandaged his wounds and poured on oil and wine. Then he put the man on his own donkey and brought him to an inn and took care of him." And we know this story, so we smile at this point. We say, "Yes, the good Samaritan." But folks, when Jesus told this story, there was no such thing as a good Samaritan. The only kind of Samaritans the people listening to knew about back then were disgusting Samaritans, despicable Samaritans, don't even belong on the same bus as us Samaritans. There were no good Samaritans. It was more like Hadfields and McCoys, Jews and Palestinians, Democrats and Republicans, Bills fans and people from Boston. The people Jesus was talking with wanted nothing to do with Samaritans ever. And yet this Samaritan really helps the guy. He gets out some of his A&D ointment that he just happened to be carrying with him. He cleans the guy up. He puts him on his back seat. He takes the guy to the nearest Holiday Inn Express. And he kept changing the bandages and tending to his wounds all night long. He really took care of the man who was so messed up. And the people listening to Jesus said, "A Samaritan?" And Jesus said, "Yep, he's a Samaritan. And there's more." Verse 35 says, "The next day, the Samaritan took out 2 denarii, 2 days' wages, and gave them to the innkeeper. He said, 'Look after him, and when I return, I will reimburse you for any extra expense you may have.'" And the people who heard the story for the first time said, "Wow, did not see that one coming at all." At which point, Jesus asked a question to get them to the moral of his story. In verse 36, Jesus says, "So which of these three, the priest, the Levite, the Samaritan, which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of the robbers?" And the expert in the law who had asked the question originally, the expert in the law that Jesus was talking to, replied, "The one who had mercy on him." Jesus told him, "Go and do likewise." Jesus asked, Who do you think was neighborly to the guy?" And the Jewish expert didn't even want to say the word Samaritan. So he said, "The guy who had mercy on him." And Jesus said, "Right, go and do it just like he did." How did he show mercy? How did this man act neighborly? How did he show kindness? Let us count the ways. The 7 ways that the Samaritan was a good neighbor. 1, he helped the guy even though it was dangerous. How did he know that the robbers weren't still waiting? How did he know he wouldn't be the next victim if he stopped to help this guy? He didn't know that. He took a chance. He risked himself because the guy needed help. 2, he helped the guy even though the guy was different from him. These two, the Samaritan and the Jewish victim lying on the ground, they are not from the same tribe. This is actually the big plot twist in Jesus' story. The Samaritan decided to reach across the aisle and help him anyway, though. Even though these two men didn't agree on hardly anything in life, the Samaritan chose to do right by the guy. 3, he helped the guy even though it probably was the guy's own fault. Sometimes people choose not to help others who are in trouble because they say, they brought it on themselves. They made foolish decisions. They're suffering for their own idiocy. They say, you make your bed, you lie in it. Do you know that they don't have guardrails on most of the mountain roads in Utah? There are no guardrails out there. Instead, they just have a rule. The rule is, if you're dumb, you're dead. Drive as you choose. This guy brought hurt on himself. It was his fault that he walked down that road and got beat up, but the Samaritan helped him anyways. 4, he helped the guy even though it wasn't convenient. Helping people is never convenient. You're never sitting at home with nothing to do and television's all boring and your kids are in bed and somebody calls, "Hey, I really need help. Could you come?" You say, "No." It never like that. He was on his way somewhere. He had to leave the guy the next morning to continue on his way. He said he'd come back, but he had to go. He clearly had things he had to do, but he stopped to help the man even though it wasn't inconvenient. 5, he helped the guy even though nobody else did. As he approached this bloody man, it's a downhill trek, he could see clouds of dust further down the road. He knew that at least 2 people had passed by here and not felt any need to help this man. So what do you call a mostly blind dinosaur who is easy to sneak by? Don't think he's Saurus. Even though the other people ahead of him acted like they didn't see this man, the Samaritan thought it was right to stop, so he stopped. 6, he helped the guy even though it cost him. It cost him time. It cost him money. It cost him his medical supplies from the first aid kit he always kept on his donkey. He got blood all over his nice new Corinthian leather car seats when he put the guy in there. But the guy needed help, so even though it cost him, the Samaritan helped him. 7, he helped the man even though it wasn't just a one-time thing. Sometimes we are willing to help people if we know that we can just help and be done. But he helped the man through the night, and then he told the innkeeper the next day he would come back later and check up on the guy. Jesus said to be a good neighbor, This is the kind of help we need to give. The man Jesus told the story to originally, the expert in the law, he had asked, "What do I have to do to be on your team, Jesus?" And Jesus told this story, and then he said, "Be like the Samaritan. Show mercy like the Samaritan. Help people like the Samaritan. You want to play for a winning team? You want to be part of the kingdom of heaven? You want to be part of a great church?" Jesus says, "Be a good teammate, like the Samaritan." In John chapter 13, Jesus said, "A new command I give you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another." Jesus said, "By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another." So how do we do that? Well, teammates in the kingdom help each other even when that's dangerous. We help people in the church who are different from us. We help people in the church even when it's inconvenient or when their trouble is their own fault. We help them even if it costs us something. We help them when nobody else wants to help them. Good teammates help people even when the issue is going to take a long time to fix. And when you're part of a good church, that's how people treat you. You know what it's like to have other people love you, even though you mess up again and again. You're still part of the team in a good church. That's how it goes, because people treat you like the Samaritan treated the guy. So let me give you three very practical applications, I think, of the story that Jesus told. Here are the three things we need to keep in mind as we are teammates in the kingdom of God. Number one, so important. Number one, people who are on your team until your coach says different. Whether you like them or not, whether you agree with them or not, you are teammates. And you know that you're all on the same team no matter how it feels to you right then. Sometimes it feels great to be teammates, but not all the time. You know? You do know that living with other people is hard, right? Being on the same team with other people, being close to them, doing life with them is challenging. Sometimes when I'm counseling a couple that's going to get married soon, they'll be sitting in my office, sitting close to each other, holding hands during our premarital session. And she'll say, "Oh, we just love each other so much. We can't get enough of each other." And he says, "That's so true. It just kills us to be apart. Every day when I have to go to work, I die a million deaths until I can see her again." And she says, "Yes, but we're getting married, and then we'll be together 24/7. And it'll be so good. We'll wake up together, and we'll eat breakfast together. We'll shop together. We'll sit together. We'll play together. We'll read together. We'll sleep together. We'll always be together." And they gaze at each other with big gooey eyes, smiling that little silly in love smile at each other. And she says, "We'll never have to leave each other, and it will be so wonderful." And then they look back over at me. What would you say at that point? I usually say, "Well, it'll be kind of wonderful." Trying to tell the truth. Life with people you love isn't always wonderful. It's not always easy. You can get crossways with people that you're close to. To be a good teammate, you have to understand that people can see things very differently from you. They don't see it the way you see it. But that doesn't mean you're not teammates. It's not always smooth sailing. You will get banged around some in a church. But no matter what happens or how it makes you feel, you stick with your team. You sort it out. You work it out. You wait it out. You get it out. But you're on the same team. You disagree, you disapprove, okay, but you don't bail, you hang in there. I have a nephew who is moving to Chicago soon to study with Second City Comedy, the people who teach you how to be funny. I'm hoping he's going to send me some notes, but when Ian was much younger, when he was a little boy, my daughter Carice used to babysit for him. And once, babysitting Ian, he said to her, "Carice, I like when you come here and there are no parents." And Carice said, "Well, thanks, Ian. I like coming to your house too, but why do you like no parents to be here?" Isn't it fun asking little kids questions? You can really find stuff out. Ian said, "Well, I say that because, well, Dad is kind of mean, and sometimes Mom, she makes bad decisions." And Carice thought that was interesting, coming from a five-year-old, and she said, "Well, Ian, what do you mean your mom makes bad decisions?" And she said, and he said, "Well, sometimes she makes me take a nap." And she says someday she won't make me take a nap, but she always forgets, and she makes me lie down, and then I go to sleep. At which point, Carice said, "You know, Ian, Uncle John used to make me take naps too. And Ian's eyes got really wide. He said, no, not Uncle John. And Carice said, yes, he did. And he did that because it was good for me. But now I don't have to do that anymore. And Ian walked away saying, wow, Uncle John makes bad decisions too. And sad to say, Ian was right. I do make bad decisions sometimes. And one of them might hurt you. And you probably make bad decisions occasionally too. And one of them might hurt me. When we're playing together on the same team, sometimes we bump into each other. Sometimes we're impacted negatively by other teammates' bad decisions. John Elway was the MVP quarterback for the Denver Broncos for a long time. And near the end of his career, he was playing in a preseason game. A totally meaningless game. Didn't really matter at all to him at all. But a rookie lineman on his team got into a fight near the bench of the opposing team, which is always a bad idea. If you're going to fight them, you fight them on your side, not their side. But a bunch of angry opponents from the other team jumped on the rookie and started wailing on him. Next thing you see, John Elway comes flying across the field, launches himself into the middle of the scrum, arms flailing, legs kicking. He was out of control, mad, and he beat on some guys until they pulled him off. After the game, they asked Elway, what in the world were you doing? Risking injury? Risking ejection? Fine? Why do you get so mad that you would jump into the fray for a rookie who's probably not even going to make your team? He started the fight on the wrong sideline. Why would you jump in? And Elway said, he was wearing our uniform. He's on my team. He gets in a fight, I have his back. I always liked Elway more after that. That's the kind of attitude the Good Samaritan had. The guy laying in his own blood, the Samaritan thought they were on the same team. No one else thought they were on the same team. Probably the guy lying there in the blood didn't think they were in the same team, but the Samaritan did. And his actions are still impacting people around the world today. Jesus says, go and do likewise. Good teammates hang in there with each other through tough times, and they come out on the other side way more connected than they used to be, which leads us to application 2 of Jesus' story. Good teammates do for each other. They do whatever they can. They do lots of stuff. They do for each other. If you want to be part of a great church, you have to be involved with the people in that church. Fred Craddock told us about a church he visited one time in the sticks, way, way out there. Way out. And he said he happened to be there on the day when a man was being baptized in the river. And he watched the preacher and the man go into the river, and the preacher lowered him under the water and brought him back up, and that was all very normal. Craddock had seen thousands of people get baptized in his life. But the thing that happened next, he'd never seen. After the baptism, as the man walked out of the river, the whole congregation lined up to greet the guy, and they each said something to him. But they didn't say congratulations or well done or I'm so glad for you, doing a good job. Craddock listened, and the first guy shook his hand and said, if you ever need a tractor, I have a John Deere. The next guy said, if you ever need work done on your car, I can do that. The next lady said, if you ever need someone to watch your kids, I will do that. The next lady said, if you ever need a meal, I will cook one for you. The next guy said, if you ever need help with your garden, I have all the tools and all the time. The next lady said, if you ever need someone to play the piano for you, call me. Every person in that church offered something to this guy who had just been baptized. Whatever they could do, whatever they were good at, they put it out there. Good teammates do for each other. They do what they do well for the good of the other people on the team. How can you do that? Practically, here's how that goes. You need to know the people in your church. You need to meet them. Every Sunday, you should meet somebody that you don't know. You should introduce yourself to somebody new, and you should ask them what they do in life and what they like and how you could possibly help them. You should make people in the church a part of your life. We should have many good friendships going on with lots of people in the world. We should be friends with families, with neighbors, with coworkers, with old friends, with families that we know from travel, whatever we're doing. But if you have zero people from the church on your dance card, how can you be a good teammate? One guy said, I'm friends with 25 letters of the alphabet. I don't know why. Do you want to know why? You know, we want to know why it's important to be involved with other Christians. Paul said, therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all people, especially to those who belong to the family of believers. Especially, Paul says, let's be good Samaritan-y to people on our team. And in that way, which is the way that Jesus did it, people will see the kingdom in us. If we can be like Jesus, who came to earth even though it was dangerous. Wow, was it dangerous? Who chose to become like us even though we were not like him at all. Who helped us even though the trouble we were in was our own fault, not his fault. Who helped us even though it would have been easier for him to stay where he was. Who helped us even though he was totally alone in that. We didn't even help him helping us. He helped us even though it cost him. Jesus chose to help us even though we keep getting back into trouble. He simply asks for us to do for others what he's doing for us. He wants us to work together as teammates, as brothers and sisters, as neighbors. And in this way, he can do things through us that will bring him delight. And us too, it will bring us delight, which brings us to the application number 3. If you will go and do likewise, like the Samaritan, if you will stick with your teammates no matter what, if you will get involved with them and offer yourself to them in service, you will eventually develop a bond with your team that will improve your life. Your life can be better. 1 year at Mountain View, there was at our Christian camp, there was a young man who had a severe stuttering problem. At first, in the beginning of the week, I didn't really know him. I thought he was just quiet because he played basketball better than anybody there, including all the staff. But no, he stutters badly. Badly. And yet one night at the end of the week, he volunteered to read scripture for our worship assembly. 8 verses. It took 12 minutes for him to read it. The most beautiful 12 minutes I think I've ever heard scripture read. And then that night he stood up at the campfire and he said, back home, he didn't say it like this, but what he said was, back home, kids don't think I'm normal. But when I come to camp, you guys treat me like you treat anybody. And then he said, I don't think anybody's normal. I don't think there really are any normal people out there. But I know that there are Christians here at this camp, and I have friends here. Good teammates value people on their team no matter what's going on with them, and that creates exceptionally strong bonds. So John Fawcett was an 18th century preacher in England. At a time when it wasn't easy to be a minister back then, especially since his church was not connected to the government church, had no outside support, so he worked for a congregation in Waynesgate, which was not even a village. It's just a straggly group of homes along a hillside. And he made £20 a year. But with a wife and 4 kids, that wasn't enough for them to even eat. So when the call came from a much larger church in London, with much greater opportunity for service and more fulfillment and a much larger pay package, he resigned from his church. And they packed up all the family belongings and they put them on the wagon. As they got ready to leave, all the people of the church came out to say goodbye. And some started to cry. And people said, John Fawcett, you better come back. They said, we sure will miss you guys. Someone yelled, John Fawcett, I will never forget you. You are the man who married us. And people started calling out other memories. And as the cart began to pull away, Mrs. Fawcett looked at her husband and she said, I can't leave. And he said, I can't leave either. So he shouted, stop the cart, stop the cart. Help us unpack these things. We can't leave y'all. And they unloaded all their belongings. And they notified the church in London that they would be staying. And there they stayed for another 54 years. That night, after he had unpacked everything that they had just packed up, John Fawcett sat down by candlelight and began to write a song that he was going to teach his congregation the next Sunday. You've probably heard of it. Some of you have probably sung it. His song went like this. Blessed be the tie that binds our hearts in Christian love. The fellowship of kindred minds is like to that above. Have you ever been part of something like that? Have you ever had people in a church who felt more like your brothers and sisters than your brothers and sisters? Have you ever been part of a group of Christians so close that you would choose not to move away when you could? If so, you've been part of the winning team that Jesus calls the kingdom of heaven. And you know that out of all the relationships in life, surprisingly, this is the best. If not, if you've never experienced that, that's really sad. Because that's right there what God created you for, to be part of a group of people who are loved by him and who love each other. But the good news today is I can invite you to be part of a church like that. Last story. A first grade Bible school teacher had a young boy walk into her class one day who only had one arm. And the teacher, wanting to make the new student feel comfortable, deliberately avoided all the songs that she had planned to sing that involved clapping so that he wouldn't feel awkward because he couldn't clap. She worried that other kids might say something rude the whole time, but the hour went by without mishap, and she was so relieved that everything had gone well. When the bell finally rang, she didn't even think before she closed the way that she always closed. She said, "Okay, let's do our closing together. Here's the church. Here's the steeple. Open the doors." And then she stopped, horrified as she realized what she had done. But a little girl sitting next to the boy moved over, put her hand up to his one hand and said, "Come on, Tim, let's build the church together." "This is my commandment," Jesus says. "This is my commandment, that you be good teammates." Let's pray.